This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Leibel Sternbach is here, Joe McKenzie, and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us now is Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist well known across the country for his insights into COVID-19. He's with us this morning. And doctor, welcome back to the show. And I just have to say that you sound rather hoarse this morning. Do you have COVID-19 or is something else going on?
I am sounding hoarse. It's only because of allergies. I've just gone through nearly certainty what's going to happen over the days ahead. From the very beginning, I have stated all my job is to call balls and strikes. How do I see them? Why do I see them? What are the data that support the way that I see them? And as you know, I've said time and time again that humility has to be a very, very prominent part of anyone's job right now with regard to predicting the future with COVID. But I will make some predictions today, clearly, and I'll give you the reasons why. And I also comment on what I think right now is unfortunately a disturbing, you might say, reemergence of some of the things that we saw in those first 3 years of the pandemic. Let me give you an example. Right now, we seem to be stuck in a narrative about, is there going to be a national mandate for masking again as case numbers increase? And this has become a hot button issue on news media shows. I'm getting lots of emails and reporter questions about this issue. And let me just make it clear, we should not let that happen again. Do I believe we will ever mandate masking as we've talked about in this country? The answer is absolutely no. Does that mean that you, as an individual, cannot protect yourself more by using an N95 respirator, particularly if you're at increased risk for serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths? I want you to know you still have that personal control to do what you want to do and how you want to do it. But please do not let particularly what I call the far right commentary, trying to divide us again about will there be these mask mandates? Will my kids have to use a mask in schools, et cetera, et cetera? I just don't think that's ever going to be a reality. And I wish we could avoid that whole discussion because it really takes us nowhere except a big black hole.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Osterholm, and it seems as if we're hearing about more and more people coming down with COVID. Are you seeing anything different now as we go into the fall of 2023?
It's fair for me to say that I feel like I'm picking which wave in a hurricane to surf today. It seems it's a challenge any way you look at this. We are clearly in uncharted territory. There is no question about that. But let's just take a step back before I really dig into this information and say that I think we're also at a major turning point in the pandemic, in that if you look at those first 3 years of the pandemic and you look at the seven different discernible peaks that we experienced, there wasn't that much time between when someone might have been vaccinated or infected and then experience the virus again or for the first time for those who were vaccinated. Waning immunity was never really one of the biggest factors we worried about. Was it getting vaccinated or have you previously been infected? But if you look at the past year, what we've actually experienced was what I had called that High Plains Plateau event, where basically we didn't see peaks, but cases just continued to be reduced in number and reduced in number and reduced in number. And we got to the point where, for many people, the last time they had a booster dose was more than a year ago, or that they had previously been infected. And we're still trying to understand what it means to have immune protection. As we know about coronaviruses, before we ever experienced SARS-CoV-2, seasonal coronaviruses would come and go. Every several years, people would be at risk for getting exposed, getting infected, because the immunity they'd had from a previous infection with another coronavirus basically waned. Now, these were the cold-like viruses, clearly not SARS or MERS or SARS-CoV-2. But now what we're looking at is that same situation on top of these rapidly emerging variants and the changing capabilities that each of those variants have for causing infection, evading immune protection, and even causing serious illness. So let me just review for where we are at. There clearly is evident rise in activity, as you just noted. It's so clear and obvious that there's widespread transmission, and it seems most of us want to be in total denial of that. Look no further than the U.S. Tennis Open right now in New York. It is clear that that is one major super spreading event to COVID, but no one will get tested among the players or coaches because they do not want to be removed from the potential to play. And yet we have them on the court sick. We have reports of many, many individuals with this illness, and it is clearly COVID. But the fact we're in denial, the media has hardly covered it, that to me is really a comment on the state of the art of where we're at with what people are accepting. So let me just be really clear. All the data right now is at best limited in terms of case numbers and defined infections as determined by testing and so forth, because as we've talked about, we know that the systems to collect that information have largely been dismantled. But we have so many anecdotal accounts of infections and outbreaks among people, many that I know. So I think a part of me has a sense of almost a deja vu moment all over again. Let me be clear. The surges that we've seen in the past, that 3 years of the primary pandemic activity, is not going to return. I'm convinced of that. But we are now in this next stage of living with COVID in a way that it doesn't mean it's disappeared, but we're trying to come to what I would call a steady state kind of setting, where basically, like other potential seasonal viruses, we live with COVID within that context. It doesn't shut us down. It doesn't cause hospitals to be overrun. It doesn't mean that we have to cancel many events.
Doctor, we have to leave it right there. We appreciate the update. He's Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist, and you're listening to New Beginnings. Just for fun this week on New Beginnings, everyone is okay after a hot air balloon made an emergency landing on a freeway median in Vermont. Authorities say the pilot earns high marks for safely setting the balloon down on the median of Interstate 91. After the aircraft stalled mid-flight last week, the pilot and his four passengers were in good shape after he set the balloon down after it was getting dark. Police say the pilot had no other options. And according to a study, Americans spend more money on fast food than on higher education. Higher education only takes 4 years to digest, and a Whopper takes about six. A study has found that close relatives can recognize each other's smell, but they don't like it. Volunteers slept in new T-shirts for 3 nights and washed it with odorless soap and were then asked to pick out which T-shirts belonged to relatives. All the children recognized their father's smell but strongly disliked it, while mothers especially disliked their children's smell. It's wacky, but it's true. In Vietnam, an elderly man who spent several hours in a drawer at a hospital morgue was found alive by relatives who had come to bury him. The hospital staff said that when he was brought in, his whole body was dark purple, his blood pressure was zero, and he had no pulse even after 30 minutes of resuscitation. And in the UK, a man took his date's phone as compensation when she refused to pay half of their bar tab. The couple met on a dating app and spent about $85. She insisted she should contribute, but she said it was the gentleman's duty to pay for everything on the first date. He became angry, grabbed her phone, and left. By the time the cops showed up, she caught up to the guy and got her phone back. And if you've got a lead foot and you want an edge when you get pulled over, be sure you're smiling at the DMV. Researchers at Boston College found that people who smile for their driver's license photo are granted more leniency by police. And finally, a woman in Romania is charged with going after a husband during a heated argument. Police say she chased him through their house with an axe, swung it at him, and missed, shattering a glass door. She's also accused of bashing his car, then struggling with police. Just for fun this week on New Beginnings.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
And with us now on New Beginnings is the AARP Minnesota Associate State Director, Jay Happel, been on the program many times, and thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And this time around, Jay, there's a lot to cover. We're going to be talking about some upcoming classes that AARP is putting on, a big data breach that happened over this summer, and it all revolves around one of the big topics that we talk about here on New Beginnings with you, fraud, scams. Let's get right into it. Talk about the Fraud Watch Network. Let's start there.
Right. So at AARP, it really starts with our members when it comes to identity theft and fraud. People are concerned about this and they need to have the information that they can use to stay safe. So we run the Fraud Watch Network. It's a program where people can get help. They can get information. If they've been targeted by a scam, we'll help them sort it out. If they've lost money to a scam, we will help them know what to do next to make sure it doesn't get any worse than it already is. And through our Fraud Watch Network and other channels, we're aware that this summer, of all government programs, it was Medicare that announced one of their contractors has been hacked and the personal information of over 600,000 Medicare beneficiaries was stolen. And this data included their social security numbers, birth dates, driver's license, health information, all kinds of information that could be used for identity theft. And what we want people to know is this isn't everyone on Medicare. This is a lot of people. It's 600,000 people, but not everyone. So if you were someone whose information was stolen, you will be notified by Medicare and they'll offer you instructions on what to do next. And in this case, Medicare is offering people 2 years of free credit monitoring services. And that's important. I can explain more about that in a moment. Because, however, like you said to begin with, Brad, this issue is a reminder of how our information is very vulnerable. It exists in copies and copies in computer databases all over the place, all the government agencies and other organizations that you do business with have copies of your information. And unfortunately, the hackers are working around the clock to try to steal this information. So if you're thinking about the paperwork you might have in your file cabinet or keeping the credit cards that are in your wallet secure or even the information that you put into the computer and making sure you're doing that properly, still we're at risk because our information exists in so many copies all over the place.
We're with Jay Hapla, AARP Minnesota Associate State Director here on New Beginnings this morning. And Jay, and I know you've done this in the past, but if you could, because it's so popular and so meaningful, give the listeners a few tips. I know you like to give good quality tips and how members and just the general public, how we can avoid all this nonsense.
And there is good news about all of this fraud. Well, it's annoying. And sure enough, some people are victimized and they lose way too much money. It can be very devastating, but we have very strong consumer protections in our country. And as long as people know how these programs work, then they're able to be very secure, whether it's in their online transactions or any of their financial transactions. You know, specifically with this Medicare data breach or other data breaches, two things you can do to protect against identity fraud are, one, to check your credit report regularly. And you can do this for free a few times each year. It's important that you know you're on the right website, because there are imposter websites out there that will try to steal your information. So it's important to visit annualcreditreport.com. So that could be easy to remember. It's three words, annualcreditreport.com. So that's an important tip. If you look at your credit report, you'll see if there's any suspicious activity and you can stop it before you lose any money. The second tip when it comes to this data breach issues is about using strong and unique passwords for all of your websites and storing them securely. So the more digits in your password for your online account, the more secure it is. So we encourage people to use sentences or passphrases instead of passwords.
The website again is aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. Fraud Watch Network. We're with Jay Hapla, AARP, the Minnesota Associate State Director. Let's talk now about some upcoming classes that you have for spotting frauds and scams, and also Medicare 101. It's time for Medicare enrollment coming up this fall.
I do want to highlight some of our events coming up this fall. We're always offering fraud education programs for free. not just AARP members, but to the public. And we have some of these fraud seminars coming up in September. There's at least three of them that I have on my list right here. September 18th at the Mall of America, the 27th at the Hallie Q. Brown Center in St. Paul, and on October 2nd over at Sebastiani in South Minneapolis. So anyone can attend these. You just have to sign up at aarp.org/mnevents. So aarp.org/mnevents, and you can come to these fraud seminars. And then also, because it is Medicare open enrollment season starting in October, this is the time of year when everyone on Medicare can choose between different plans. And I'll tell you, over the years, I've heard a lot of people take very much pride in the fact that they've had the same Medicare plan for 10 years or 20 years. And that's not necessarily the best way to go, because the way things change, you might get a better deal by using a different Medicare insurance provider. Now, we have a Medicare 101 session again at the Mall of America in it's October 11th. And then we have partnered up with the Twin Cities Area Agency on Aging. It's called Trellis, and their job, they have volunteers and staff who are trained on all of these differences in Medicare plans that happen every year. And they are offering one-on-one Medicare counseling sessions, so you can talk with them about your specific issues and what you pay for and what you need coverage for, and they'll help you navigate between all these different plans. And these one-on-one sessions are available on the second and third Fridays of the month in September, October, and November. And this is a little different. To set up one of these one-on-one Medicare appointments, you call the Senior Linkage Line, and that number is 800-333-2433.
All right. I want to give that number again. It always takes me two or three times before I can, before it gets through the old melon here. 800-333-2433. Again, for the Medicare counseling sessions, the info center, the phone number, 800-333-2433. And for the spotting frauds and scams, that's aarp.org/mnevents. Jay Hapala, AARP Minnesota Associate State Director, thank you so much for your time again today on New Beginnings.
You too. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. And joining us right now is the esteemed founder and president of the Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse, Mr. John Schwartz. He's here today. And before we get started, let's talk about how our listeners can find you. When we talk about ending elder abuse, I'm sure that's perking up a lot of ears. How can we reach out to you, sir?
Hi, Freddie. Thank you very much for having me today. And our website is endefa.org. I'll spell it again, endefa.org. That's endelderfinancialabuse.org. And you can reach out to me through that. So please do.
All right. Now, we've talked often, John, about strategies to combating financial elder abuse, but you've got a really good resource that I hope you can share it with us today that can help our listeners as well. And it's all due to a relationship you have with some folks at Wayne State University.
Yeah, that's right, Freddie. I'm very excited to share this with everybody. I've had an opportunity to connect with Dr. Peter Lichtenberg, who's the director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University, and they're near Detroit. And what Dr. Lichtenberg has developed is a 17-question financial vulnerability survey. And this is huge, because this is exactly what our nation's 56 million elders need. You need to conduct an assessment on how vulnerable an elderly person is, because that's exactly what our financial predators do. And you and I've discussed this before in the past. But this survey, when I came across Dr. Lichtenberg's work and the survey, I was amazed, because this is the exact tool that our nation's 56 million elders need. And it's a very simple tool, and it'll tell you right on the spot what your concerns should be.
Everyone, we're talking with John Schwartz, the founder and president of the Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse. Tell us about, or can you share some of the questions that are on that vulnerability survey?
Yeah, it's going to ask, you know, do you live alone? Do you live with a family? things of this nature. I can also share with you that they'll do a quick survey for you just to find out a little bit about your living situation. But it's very, very simple. You're going to give it your age. Where do you live alone, like I said, and then as you're in discuss memory. And then into that, Freddie, it goes into these very simple questions.
Well, how important is it to understand your vulnerability? So what are some basic things? If I were to ask you right now, how can I protect myself against financial abuse, people taking my hard-earned money, what would you tell me to do?
Well, the first thing I'd tell you to do is once you conduct this vulnerability assessment and you find out where you are, get with a trusted and responsible family member or loved one and share this information and start hardening the target. Find your areas that you're most vulnerable. Maybe you do live alone and maybe your kids do live a couple hundred miles away. That's a huge vulnerability because the predators will want to isolate you. So talk with your family and loved ones. Maybe ask them to visit at least one more time per year because that can make the difference. And then also what I'd say, Freddie, is let's take a look at your use on social media because that's always been very concerning because that's exactly where these predators are operating. And if they see a profile of an individual that's alone, has been alone for a few years, they will target you. And then finally, just proper cyber hygiene. Please update when your computer says it has updates. Please make sure that you employ these updates because that's an incredible vulnerability too. What we've seen and the reason I say that is because these individuals, these predators, if they can gain access to your computer, they'll start speaking to you through the computer and claim that they're Microsoft or some other company and that they've noticed a couple of vulnerabilities on your computer that they're being exploited right now and that you have to move quickly. Then once they get you on that, then they take you down the road. So does aiding, I can't talk about that enough. You got to be up on your cyber intelligence and you have to be able to update these computers.
Before we have to step away, how can we get more information? And more importantly, is this survey on your website?
Yes, it is, Freddie. It's on our front page of our website. So what's really neat about that, you can conduct the survey. It's right that you don't even have to click on anything to find it. It's right there on the front page. Once you take the survey, then you can read about the convicted predators that we've already found, to especially Scott Cohen, who stole $300 million through a Ponzi scheme. And now you can see your vulnerabilities and then read about these predators and start to determine if you're vulnerable to those type predators that we're posing. So it's really, you spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes on the website conducting the survey and then studying these predators. Now you're a little bit better off than what you were 30 minutes prior.
All right. Final time, how can we contact you? What is the website and what will you do for those folks who come in to visit with you?
Hey, so again, our website is endefa.org. Again, it's endefa.org. Reach out to me if you have a situation that I can provide insight on. I'm happy to do that. Also happy to, you want to reach out to me, ask me to come and speak with an organization, please reach out to me through the website, and I'm happy to do that as well.
All right. He's John Schwartz, founder and president of Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse, and we're really appreciative of you for listening to New Beginnings. We'll be right back. It happened this week in 1789, President George Washington appointed Alexander Hamilton the first Secretary of the Treasury. In 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt ordered an immediate attack on any German or Italian vessels operating in U.S. defensive waters. In 1941, construction on the Pentagon began. It was completed and dedicated on January 15, 1943. In 1954, 19-year-old Lee Ann Meriwether won the first televised Miss America pageant. The event was broadcast on ABC television. In 1967, The Carol Burnett Show aired for the first time on CBS.
Tarzaniel?
You want me to do my Tarzaniel? All right. Okay. I just shaved my chest. I might not do it.
The popular program stayed on the air for 11 years. In 1987, reggae musician Peter Tosh died at the age of 42. He founded the reggae group The Wailers. In 1987, actor Lauren Green died at the age of 72. He is best known for his role as Ben Cartwright on the television show Bonanza. And then in 1988, actor John Sylvester White died at the age of 68. He's best remembered for playing Vice Principal Michael Woodman on the television show Welcome Back, Cotter.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too.
And finally, in 2003, Emmy-winning sitcom star John Ritter died in L.A. after suffering an aortic aneurysm. Ritter was best known for his portrayal of the bumbling Jack Tripper in the 1970s sitcom Three's Company. John Ritter was 54. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature and is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Today we're going to talk about the biggest mistakes people make with Roth conversions and how to avoid them. We're going to talk about Aunt Irma, Uncle Ronald RMD, and our good old friend Uncle Sam. So stick around while we go through the nitty-gritty of what you need to know before doing a Roth conversion. Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Label Sternbach, Amazon's best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety, and he's also the author of the book Authenticity. On this episode of Label on Fire, we're going to be talking about all the uncles and all the aunts and all the Roth IRAs. Label, hello, and welcome back to the show.
I'm doing good. How are you?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, I'm really excited about this, but I don't want to assume that our audience know exactly what a Roth conversion is. Can we start there as a basic to lay the foundation?
Yeah. So a Roth conversion, and I'm going to use my definition of a Roth conversion, which I think is a little different than, you know, kind of the industry standard, which is the way I look at a Roth conversion is you deciding when and how to pay taxes on your retirement money. Traditionally, you would have, you know, the IRS would determine when you take that money out or when you take it out to fund your lifestyle, you pay taxes on it. Doing a Roth conversion allows you to pull that money out of that account when it's convenient for you, pay taxes on it, and then set it aside in a tax-free account that grows tax-free. And when you take the money out, it's tax-free. Obviously, we're talking about the government, so there's always strings attached. But for the most part, for planning purposes, generally speaking, right, that money gets to be tax-free for the future. And it's about prepaying that taxes when it's convenient for you.
All right. We're talking with Label Sternbach about Roth conversions. So it seems like there's a lot of opinions out there, Label, about Roth conversions. Do them when you are in the lower tax bracket, as you mentioned. Don't trigger something called an IRMA or an IRMA, go into a higher tax bracket? What are your thoughts? Let's just take them one at a time, if you don't mind.
So let's talk about what IRMA is, and then we can talk about whether, you know, in understanding what it is, you can decide whether it's something that really matters to you, right? So when we talk about, you know, retirement, right, we've got Social Security, we've got Medicare, and, you know, you got your income needs. And so when we are taking Medicare, Medicare is an insurance program run by the government, right? It's run by the Social Security Administration. And they charge you a premium, right, for having this insurance. Now, depending on, you know, what you're getting and whatnot, they may say, well, it's free for you, or you have to pay, you know, X number of dollars. IRMA is a surcharge, you know, a tax, if you will, that is levied upon people who make, quote unquote, too much money. So if you make too much money in retirement, the, you know, Medicare Administration, Social Security Administration will come to you and they will say, well, listen, you're making too much money. We need you to pay more in insurance because you can afford it. Now, we know that that, you know, is kind of irrelevant. But that's just one of the ways that our government kind of puts the stealth tax. You know, they, nobody cares about it except for those people who are retired and, you know, who are, you know, actually trying to get, you know, get by on more than rice and beans. You know, they have to worry about this IRMA. So IRMA is a surcharge that is charged on how much you pay for your Medicare. The question really is, you know, when people get scared about it and they're like, well, I don't want to trigger that IRMA, the, you know, don't get sidetracked from the reason why you would be doing Roth conversions. Roth conversions, you know, they, when you pull the money out, it becomes taxed as ordinary income. It shows up on your tax return. It can trigger IRMA, you know, that surcharge if you're pulling out too much money, no different than if you were paying, you know, getting paid a lot in a W-2 job. The real question becomes, is the amount of money that you're saving, right, that you were willing to pay this upfront taxes on, is it still more, you know, factoring in IRMA than you would if you waited until later and pulled, you know, your money out as the government wants? And so you really just need to factor that into your calculation and not look at it as something that I'm scared to trigger IRMA, right? It's just money that you're paying to the government. And really, it doesn't matter whether it's going to the IRS or it's going to the Medicare Administration.
So that's really simple. Is it as simple as, okay, I understand what I'm doing, just making a calendar entry, for example, to know when you should act on certain aspects of IRMA or RMDAs?
So the required minimum distributions is, you know, that you'll know ahead of time, because that's the government says, you know, depending on your age, this is how much money you have to pull out of your retirement accounts each year. You know, right. It used to be 70 and a half, then they moved it to 72. Now it's 73, depending on your age. Depending on how old you are, you know, every year they say, well, you have to pull out this percentage of money from your retirement accounts, your traditional retirement accounts, your 401ks, your 403bs, you know, your IRAs. So you need to pull that money out. When you pull that money out, it gets taxed as ordinary income, as if you got paid for a job, right? So this allows Congress to, you know, kind of harvest this investment they've made in your future by letting you get that tax deduction when you put the money in. So they're guaranteeing that they're going to get their money back, that you're not going to be able to sit on that money tax-free for forever. Now, having said that, right, so those are required minimum distributions. If the amount of money that you need to live on is going to be less than your required minimum distributions, or you're worried that taxes are going to go up significantly in the future, then you would, right, conceivably, it would make sense that you would save money if you pay taxes now on your money rather than waiting for some time in the future. Mm-hmm. But like anything in life, it's not that simple, right? If it was a simple calculation, we wouldn't have 80,000, you know, pages of the IRS tax code. We wouldn't have, you know, the most complex tax system in the world. Because, you know, that's what keeps people in business. We would, you know, things would be very simple and we'd be like other countries. So because we have that complexity, that means that those calculations aren't so straightforward. And you've got to factor in things like IRMA. You got to factor in, you know, the tax deductions and tax exclusions. because all of those things have an impact on how much taxes you're actually going to pay. And I think you should just look at IRMA and RMDs as, you know, those are things that could influence your decision one way or the other. Now, you know, from my standpoint, generally speaking, I've very rarely seen IRMA have a significant impact. And I would really say that if the deciding factor for you of whether to do a Roth conversion or not is based on your IRMA, on that surcharge that you have for earning too much, I think that you need to reevaluate whether actually a Roth conversion makes sense for you or not. Because if that is a factor in your calculation, chances are that you're hitting yourself with more taxes now than you would actually have in retirement. And you may be, and you're worrying, you know, that should be an indication to you that that doing a Roth conversion might not actually be saving you money.
Lavelle Sternbach joining us this week. So what's the biggest mistake in your opinion that people are making right now when they're doing these Roth conversions?
I think the biggest mistake is looking at their retirement or looking at the Roth conversion decision in isolation. And they'll say, well, you know, I have this money and it's going to be subject to RMDs. They don't think about what those RMDs will be. And then they say, well, I just want to save as much money as possible in taxes and I'm going to convert it all. Right. Or they convert very aggressively and they look at it in isolation from, well, how much income do they actually need in retirement, right? What their required minimum distributions are going to be in the future, and will it be more than their income needs or not? And then, you know, they look at it in isolation from what their potential taxes are in the future. You know, you got to look at things in context, and you got to look at how it's going to impact your retirement lifestyle at the end of the day, right? Because remember, you're paying taxes on it. That means you're taking that hit up front in terms of your portfolio balance. And I really, you know, I hear people justify and saying, well, I have this money in my savings account, I have this money in my checking account to pay for the taxes. That doesn't stop it from being your money. It doesn't stop it from being money that you're going to use to fund your retirement. And you need all your dollars to be working for you. Right? Like the fact that it's in a different account doesn't stop it from being money that should be working for you. And so when it comes to doing these calculations, you got to think about it as you're doing calculus, not algebra, right? You're not doing simple arithmetic. You're doing a complex equation that has multiple pieces moving together at the same time. And you need to really see how it interacts with those other pieces. Otherwise, I can virtually guarantee that you're going to be making the wrong decision.
So making wrong decisions, what about the mistakes people make with the five-year rule? Can you explain what that is and how people get tripped up with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the five-year rule says, so there's two rules when it comes to Roth conversions that you really need to keep in mind. So remember, right, for every positive thing that we have, there is a counterweight to it, right? There's no such thing as a free lunch, especially in this country, right? We firmly do not believe in free lunches. And so when you do a Roth conversion and you take that money and you say, and Congress is basically saying, we're not going to, you know, take taxes from it ever again. So we're relinquishing our rights to that money. In theory, that doesn't mean they can't come back later and change their minds. But as the tax code is written right now, right, they're relinquishing their rights. But in order to do that, they're going to give you some caveats. One caveat is they're going to say, we want this money to be used for retirement, right? We don't want you to use this money for, you know, buying a business. We don't want you to use this money to go on a vacation. We want this for your retirement. And in order to ensure that it's for your retirement, you can't touch this until you're 59 and a half or for 5 years. Now, keep in mind, this only applies to the growth, right? So because you already pay taxes on your contribution or your conversion, right? So it doesn't apply to that money. You can pull that out. But it's on the growth when you take that money out and you're not paying taxes on this money that ordinarily you would have paid money on because it's new money. That's where these penalties start coming in, and they want you to have had it in the account for five or more years, and be 59 and a half. And this applies to every single conversion you do, right? So every time you do a conversion, it starts a new 5-year clock. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing this conversion, if you, again, it's another one of those red flags. If you're like, I'm going to be living on this money in the next 5 years, chances are a Roth conversion is not right for you, not because of this rule, but because you're not going to have enough time to actually realize any of the benefits. And all you're doing is front loading your taxes, which again, right? Just because you're front loading your taxes doesn't mean it's the wrong decision, but it might not be the right decision for you. You got to look into the context. And I literally, you know, a day doesn't go by where I don't talk to one retiree where, you know, I give one recommendation and say, this is absolutely the best decision for you. And then to someone else, I'll say the exact same thing is the absolute worst thing that they can do for their retirement, for the financial security and retirement. And it's all because, you know, everything is really based on your personal situation. What's right for one person is not right for the next person. And you got to figure out how these numbers work together.
That makes sense. Got one final question before we have to step away. Can you give us, as we say goodbye, some tips on avoiding Roth conversion mistakes, Label?
Number one, don't give in to the fear mongering that, you know, taxes are going to go up and so therefore you should do Roth conversions, right? That's tip number one. Figure out the numbers, map it out, and see if it makes sense for you, right? Don't make financial decisions on something that maybe will happen. Make decisions based on things that you have a high degree of certainty about. That's number one. Number two, do not get caught up in this illusion of tax-free money in retirement using life insurance. This is all the rage now. People are they really are preying on people on this tax-free money in retirement using life insurance. It is not quite what it looks like. And so, you really need to make sure that whatever you're doing makes sense for you and map it out. And you should have no doubts that this is the best thing, the best decision for you. And if you aren't certain that you're making the best decision, then I would really question whether it is what you should be doing.
Makes a lot of sense. We got to leave it right there. But if you like more information about Roth conversions and also all the acronyms that we share with you today, just go to yieldsforyou.com. That's yields. The number four, the letter U.com for more information. Join us again next week as we discuss specific strategies for how to make the most of your Roth conversion. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead. Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell. Pull out the chips. Today is National Guacamole Day. It brings fresh flavors together for perfect celebrations. Avocados shine as a star of this dip. Lime juice, tomatoes, onion, and seasonings make a guacamole a guilt-free addition to any snack or a meal. Since avocados fall under the superfood category, feel free to indulge. Expect a flavorful dip packed full of good fats and nutrients along with the fresh taste of lime and a hint of spice. It's easy to make, too. Take it to work or use it as a party dish. Today is National Guacamole Day. As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with the program already in progress.
Oh boy, do I want to follow that. Thanks for warming them up. Getting the joy to flow right here, right now. I particularly like that lyric because I find it very meaningful to think that each one of us is a melody that God is singing into life. Do you ever stop and think that you are truly, literally, God's song? God's song. That amazes me. That gets me going. That gets me here right now. And that's the theme of my lesson. We're speaking about the angel of joy today. And we only behold that angel. We only sense it. We only welcome it. We only receive it when we're present, when we're in the now moment, the now moment. I catch myself more frequently than I like to admit, dwelling on my past. Oh, and there were some fun times. I talked about dancing in Unity Seminary with shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. There was good back there in the past. And other times, oh, whether it's this church, my individual life, oh, what's going to happen ahead? You know that old joke about, what is that on the road? Ahead? No, ahead. That was, I know, that's an old one. But thinking about the future, and I'm not always holding great expectations or welcoming because I'm too busy worrying about what might be, what could happen. Will I be ready? Will I be capable? Many of you have joined me for my Monday and Tuesday class recently. I'm pleased to say that we have 39 people attending those classes. But we're doing them hybrid. We have people in other states joining us over the screen and some special technology. And Tyler showed me how to set it up. But when the evening came, I had to set it up by myself. And I worried about that. What's going to happen tonight? Am I going to be able to do it? Will I get it right? All that forward worry and that remembering the past can keep us, keep me, from, as Ram Dass said, be here now. Anybody remember Ram Dass? I got to hear him speak at UND Temple in Kansas City. And I was just amazed. Sanctuary seated 1,300, and that wasn't enough for the crowd. The aisles, the stairs, everything filled in that room to almost a dangerous capacity. And he reminded us, as I will attempt to in my own way, to be here now, to be present to one another. I had a conversation this very morning before the service with some wisdom teachers I know. And we were talking about, well, what is the purpose of my life at this point? And we were reflecting. It sounds simplistic. Oh, that's just too easy. But perhaps our purpose, most essentially, is to be present and to be present to one another. To be present to one another. I'm going to challenge myself this week, and so I'm going to invite you into the challenge too. Keep a little journal, a piece of paper in the car, on your bedside table, by your TV, wherever you want to. But just try to notice and make little notes to yourself on that paper. I won't be seeing it. I won't be grading it. It's just for you. But keep a few notes when you notice yourself dwelling on the past or worrying about the future. In other words, not being here now. Just as we were singing with T. Michael and Judy a moment ago, that energy and the joy, yeah, you might remember it a few minutes later now, but you really felt it in the moment when it was happening. So this angel of joy, which we are greeting on this fourth Sunday in Lent, is something that is captured in the moment, is greeted in the moment. Joy is now. Not yesterday, not in the future, but now. My lessons are based on the book Are Better Angels by Jonathan Reckford. He is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity. And I'm getting so inspired that with the help of someone, I hope that we might invest some of our time in this coming year in a Habitat for Humanity project. They're really quite amazing. They've been conducted all over the world. Again, you may say, what a simple idea, Reverend Stacy.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the Senior Minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. So glad you're joining us this weekend, and here are today's words of the wise. Be on time. Punctuality is the cornerstone of reliability and respect. When you prioritize being on time, you demonstrate your commitment to your commitments. It sends a powerful message to those around you that you value their time as much as your own. Time is an irreplaceable resource. It's the one thing we can't get more of. So, whether it's a meeting or an appointment, make a habit of being punctual. It's a simple yet powerful way to build trust and to show your dedication to those you interact with. Today's words to the wise, be on time and stay on the lookout for my new book. It's entitled Outburst. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.